MacDevitt.com. I'm Uncle Bill,
and I am the Creepy Kentuckian, if you will.
This is another edition of Dead Pit Radio.
Yes, the only internet horror talk radio show.
We've got so much news to talk about, and we've got a really good interview, and it's going to take up some time.
Yeah, because this is the first week of May
of the Dead
with Gary Clark of Day of the Dead.
So we want to get to that as soon as possible. So we're just going to breeze through the news stories we got this week.
And we also have a lot of DVD reviews towards the end of the show. I know we're talking about The Invisible Man Season 1 from Dark Sky Films.
Tear It Back to You from Brain Damage Film.
We got Means to an End, independent short film we're going to talk about.
And I'm going to be talking about There's Nothing Out There, which is a Rolf Kanievski film I've been wanting to watch for a long time.
And we have an unearthed horror film called Parents that I'm going to review.
So let's just get right into the news with the first story and probably the biggest story in the last week, which is the news on the Friday the 13th remake / reimagining.
Oh, I can't wait to hear. Prequel / what's the news?
Whatever. Okay, the news is, in a nutshell, that sadly it seems like things are at standstill with rights issues for that film.
I'll be goddamn.
So it looks like it's dead for right now.
Yeah, here's a little thing I was wondering about. I know that once New Line got the franchise, for some reason they couldn't use the name Friday the 13th. Mm-hmm. And I was wondering how they were going to do that exactly. I'm sure they had to get the rights from Paramount to use the name, and maybe that. I love Paramount, by the way.
Yeah, way to go.
If that's the case, that's my favorite studio right now.
But the last word anybody's heard on it is, you know, Platinum Dunes was the ones that were supposed to be trying to get a chance to do it, and they have basically right now scrapped the idea of the project until further notice. So that's great.
Yeah,
in my opinion.
I really enjoyed hearing that. We got a quick tidbit on Bravo's 100 Even Scarier Moments. If you remember, a couple years ago, they came out with the 100 Scariest Movie Moments, which had, it was like 5 or 6 hours long, and it had freaking like everybody involved with the horror genre they were interviewing.
Yeah.
Well, our good friend Eli Roth mentioned recently that he taped a new special for Bravo called 100 Even Scarier Movie Moments, which will probably air sometime in October. He also mentioned that Cabin Fever and Hostel are on the list, which is a pretty big honor, so I was more than happy to do the filming for that special.
I thought it was supposed to be the scariest moments, not the shittiest moments.
Yeah.
I mean,
yeah, that would be.
I guess so.
It seems like I thought Cabin Fever was on the fucking first 100 list. That doesn't make sense. Wasn't it on there?
I don't remember it being on there, but it's possible.
Yeah, I remember the first one, actually. They gave nods to fucking, like, Argento and I think Fulci even.
Yeah.
So that was pretty cool.
There's a lot of stuff on that. The first list that I thought was really good. Yeah. They had some Cronenberg stuff on there, too, that was right up there at the top. But, anyway, some new news about Masters of Horror Season 2. It seems that John Saxon, who you all probably remember as being the sheriff in A Nightmare on Elm Street, has joined the cast of, which guy we just talked about, Dario Argento's Masters of Horror episode called Pelts, which will also star Meatloaf. So,
I would do anything to suck for.
And actually, Saxon had worked with Argento before. I don't know if you remember in Tenebra. But Saxon tells Fangoria that he's playing the trapper who sells the pelts. And that's all we know about that.
So
that's new casting information from Masters of Horror.
Yeah, I know they're shooting a lot of that stuff lately. I think the Argento one just finished.
Yeah, it was. They were filming in Vancouver.
And the new Tobe Hooper one is just starting. I think Mick Garris was talking about that. But we got news on yet another sequel, which has turned into a prequel, sort of, with Halloween 9.
Mm-hmm. Oh, God, yeah, this is hilarious right here.
Horror remake mastermind Jake Wade Wall, who is behind the Hitcher remake, which I didn't even know was in production, and When a Stranger Calls, the big hit from earlier this year, spills all the beans on what he has been doing with the Halloween franchise. He revealed to MovieHole.net that the script being used right now is called Halloween the Missing Years, which tackles what happened to Myers before he escaped the mental institution as a kid. In addition to this big news, Wall also reveals that Sony Screen Gems has fast-tracked When a Stranger Calls 2.
Yeah, I can't believe that. That's like 6 degrees separation. That's a sequel to a remake of... already been remade.
Yeah, sequel. It was a TV movie, When a Stranger Calls Back, which was pretty shitty, too.
God damn, that's like 4 degrees separation, that movie.
Yeah. Let me just tell you this. Who wants to know what the fuck happened when he was in the mental institution? That's fucking stupid. Going back to Michael Myers.
They're fishing with this shit, and they don't know what they want to do. They have no idea. It's like when I'm surprised. I really am surprised, because normally when they run out of ideas for, you know, horror villains, they either shoot them into space or, you know, they take them back to, like, the childhood period. So that's what they did here.
Yeah.
I guess they figured since Jason X was in space, they couldn't do that formula. That's normally what happens.
See, the thing is, they know that a Texas Chainsaw prequel is being made. So they're like, maybe somebody would care about what Michael did in between those years. Let me tell you something. What made Halloween so effective is you didn't know too much about Michael Myers. You just know that he's crazy. He's coming. He wants some babysitters.
Mm-hmm.
And
That was the whole Donald Pleasance big spiel. He was just evil.
The same thing with Texas Chainsaw Massacre.
I'll tell you what, though.
I don't give a shit.
In actuality, though, in part six, they probably blew all that because they tried to have that big backstory about, you know, the curse.
I think they ignored that after part six, though. It was just
they've already tried this once before, and it didn't turn out well at all.
Why can't you just make a straight sequel? Let Dante Tomaselli direct it, and I guarantee you it would probably be the best sequel since at least part four.
Yeah, I agree, but they're not going to do that.
I mean, give somebody a chance.
Jeez. We'll go and see it anyway, but it'll be shitty.
Yeah, it probably will. It's shitty.
Here's a remake that I figured you'd be interested in.
No.
They're remaking. They're going to. There's no shit. Tim Cox, the man responsible.
Tim Cox.
Man responsible for sci-fi originals like Larva.
All right.
And Mammoth recently told a magazine that he's working on the Chud remake. I'm not even kidding.
Yeah.
It says, here's what he had to say. Brooke Durham and I are in the process of penning the treatment for a remake of one of 1984's craziest horror films, Chud, which deals with a monstrous, mutated subterranean carnivore. On the latter, we can hopefully pull it off as well as recent revisions such as Dawn of the Dead and The Hills Have Eyes.
What?
This is what this guy says. Yeah. I'm not making it up.
I know. But
our version is much darker, grittier, and downright surrealistic compared to the original film, but we think fans will appreciate the fresh approach. Who in the shit ever asked for a Chud remake? What fans are they talking about? Is there really like a community of people that want that to be remade?
The thing about Chud is, and this is just amazing, that out of all the movies that they could remake, that they're already thinking about Chud remake.
Didn't you actually do like a spoof of this?
Yeah, we did actually. I think it was from Chud 2, Bud the Chud, I mentioned.
But who in the hell would ever thought that they would make?
That's just beyond freaking fucktastic, so I would say. I mean,
it is.
It's just so funny.
It's shit-tacular.
That all these guys want to remake all these films, and now you're going for stuff like Chud.
Mm-hmm.
What's next? Are they going to remake Troll? Are they going to remake The Ghoulies?
Yeah, probably.
Yeah.
I don't see.
I'd be more up for a Ghoulies remake than I would for Chud.
The only thing different will be the Ghoulies will be CG, but yeah, they probably will.
Yeah. I'm looking forward to that. I want to see Chud in theaters.
I do too, because we missed out, the original.
I don't even think it was in theaters. Definitely not around here. Anywho, I got a little tidbit on D.T. Carney's Dead Things that I want to mention on here. He sent us an email recently. There's going to be a standard R-rated version with special features. Then there's also going to be a more gore unrated edition with special features in the short film 11 p.m. And we've actually saw screenshots from the more gore version, I believe. Mm-hmm. God damn, them things look fucking killer, don't they?
That's some good makeup.
I'm looking forward to seeing that. And also, I was on their site, and I saw that if you're in the Central Valley area, California, you can be an extra in Dead Things, which is going to be filming its last reshoot pretty soon. And you can check out GallowsHillProductions.com for more info on that. if you want to be a zombie in the last filmings of that movie.
And this, I want to bring this to everybody's attention because this is one of the coolest ideas for a special feature on a DVD that I've ever heard of. The new Final Destination 3 DVD, which is two-disc edition from New Line, will be out on July 25th for anybody that wants to pick that up. Now, I probably will.
I'll get it when it's used.
Yeah. But here's the thing that makes this completely, like, new to me. The disc will have a new level of interactivity, a Choose Their Fate option, which utilizes streaming video to allow viewers to decide whether certain characters die or not. They actually film, like, 25, 30 minutes extra footage after the film and of the actors, not being killed, I guess. And you can decide, like, their fate.
That's fucking awesome, actually.
Yeah, I've never, like, heard of anything like that. But I'd say that'll probably happen a lot more.
You know what, too? I mean, it seems like if you listen to the show every once in a while that all we do is complain about everything and shit. These Final Destination movies are awesome. Mm-hmm. I've enjoyed every one of them. They're all fun movies to watch. And, there's a few movies out there in the mainstream. We're not going to be like some people that we've talked to that are completely against everything mainstream, which we sort of are. But there's a few things that we do enjoy, actually.
Yeah, I'm not against everything mainstream. I like a lot of the Hollywood stuff, but I would say 75% of it I can't stand.
Yeah, I mean, every once in a while, you'll go to a movie thinking it's not going to be that great, and it ends up being one of your favorite movies. Like, I remember The Devil's Rejects when we saw that last summer. I didn't have much of an expectation for it, but it turned out to be one of the best movies I'd seen all year, actually.
Yeah, there are still, like, mainstream films that come out that are good and that we like. However, in my opinion, I really think that independent films make a lot more quality films than, Hollywood does right now.
Yeah, but I mean, we both know, though, that there's shit on both sides. I mean,
yeah, but I'm saying that for the amount of films that come out and for the ones that I've seen, the independents, as far as consistency goes, have the most number of films that I liked.
Yeah. Going on, though, we're going to go to another mainstream movie that's going to be out this October, Saw 3. We read earlier this morning that veteran TV actor Angus McFadden of Redvine will star as a new character in the Darren Lynn Bousman-directed Saw 3, which is currently being written by Bousman and Lee Whannell. Mm-hmm. And it's also going to star Bahar Sumek of Crash and Mission Impossible 3. There's really no story yet. It's just, I think all Bousman said was it's the most fucked up of Jigsaw's games and the most psychologically intense.
Yeah. So, from what I've read about what they're planning on doing in that movie, that's going to have a lot of plot holes in it that you can probably drive a Mack truck through, yeah. Actually.
Another thing about those Saw movies, that's really not horror to me. What it is,
I don't know what you classify those damn movies. The first one was horror. And the second one's kind
of
like,
I thought it was more along the lines of psychological thriller sort of movie.
I tell you what,
it had some gore elements.
The second one, I guess you'd call it like thriller, psychological. Yeah. Because it kind of reminds you of like Seven and The Usual Suspects.
But not as good.
Like that. Yeah, but definitely not as good. And you want to talk about, we always talk about bad news. But here's some more great news right here, okay. In my opinion. Eli Roth's remake of the 1956 horror film, The Bad Seed.
Yeah.
Okay. For a long time.
Which is one of my favorites, actually.
Yeah, for a long time it's been reported that old Eli was going to take a stab at remaking this film. Well, apparently since he's so busy making Hostel 2 and Cabin Fever 2 and whatever the shit it is else he's trying to make with, Rodriguez and Tarantino, that'll probably never get made. Apparently the Bad Seed project has been scrapped for right now.
Good.
So hopefully he'll just forget about it. And it'll just never get done.
Maybe he'll forget about it. They'll probably hire somebody else.
I don't care. If they hire somebody else, it'd be better than him.
I'm placing a bet right now, though, that Rhoda, the kid in the movie, the little girl, will be played by Dakota Fanning. I can guarantee you that.
Yeah, because she's the only, child actress.
She's the only one that anybody hires for some reason.
Yeah. Here's what Roth had to say about it, though, which, I always love to quote Eli Roth. It's just fun. The problem is, I love The Bad Seed, but I just don't know how I'm going to do everything. Hostel was originally going to be the movie that I was going to do between The Bad Seed and Cabin Fever. I just go and do this little film for $4 million, and then Hostel opened at number one and became the main focus. I love the project, and I'd love to do it. But at this point, I don't want to stop studio from making it. It's taking a back seat right now.
I think, well.
What a cock.
I think the problem with the Bad Seed movie, too, is you're not going to find a kid that can act that well nowadays. I mean, Dakota Fanning might be the only one, because Patricia McCormick, who I think was the girl in that, she did a really freaking good job in that movie, and there's really no kids today that can act that good, honestly.
Yeah.
It's another problem with it, but.
The main problem.
I've got some details on the Slither DVD, which they're hoping to make their money back on the DVD of it, since no real horror fans went to go see the movie. For some reason, they wanted to go see video game films like fucking Silent Hill.
Yeah.
And it just, I'm ashamed of.
People were too busy watching RV. So.
I'm seriously ashamed of like the movie-going audience out there. Because I know there's a lot of people that talk to us through email and through, MySpace or whatever. Say they love 80s movies and shit. Well, why the fuck couldn't you go see Slither? We're not telling you it's original. We're telling you it's something different.
Mm-hmm.
And the only way to keep getting something different in theaters is supporting the shit that comes out that doesn't look like it was filmed in front of a blue screen. You know what I'm saying?
But you basically guaranteed with this Silent Hill bullshit that all we're going to get for the next year is either video games or remakes. So, well, thank everybody for that.
Well, anyway, back to the DVD details on this. There's no release date yet, but if I was guessing, it would probably be around August when the DVD comes out. That's how it usually, about 4 months. It's going to include DVD commentary with Nathan Fillion and the director as well. Deleted scenes, extended scenes, gag reel, Whoville Party, bringing Slither's creatures to life, visual effects progressions, Lloyd Kaufman on-set video diary, and much more. I mean, that's all they've announced so far, but it's pretty early on.
I want to mention real quick two different up-and-coming films from people that we like here on the show, pretty much.
We love them.
Yeah, and first is Felissa Rose, who we've interviewed, and she's a really nice woman.
We love her.
She has just joined the cast of Dead and Gone, which is an indie horror feature directed by Yossi Sasson, and written by novelist Harry Shannon. And if you want to check out the website, it's www.deadandgonethemovie.com. And also the second part is that I've been trying to figure out how to pronounce this guy's name forever, but I think it's Brian Usna. Something to that effect.
Brian Usna.
Yeah, Brian Usna, whatever. But he brought us classics like, The Dentist and Rob
Beyond
Wilder.
Reanimator.
Yep, a bunch of movies like that. He's coming out with a new haunted demonic lake movie called Beneath Still Waters.
Mm.
So you can check that out from Fantastic Factory if you want.
Yeah. I guess we should take a quick break, though, and we'll be back with some more news. I know we're talking a little bit about the new Ruggiero Deodato movie. Whatever else we've got to talk about.
Yeah, we'll be talking about MTV. It's always fun.
But we'll be right back after this quick message here on Dead Pitch. On October 20th through 22nd, 2006, in Racine, Wisconsin, it is. It came from Lake Michigan, Wisconsin's only horror film festival. All independent filmmakers nationwide are welcome to participate in. It came from Lake Michigan, with special guests including Lloyd Kaufman, Fred Olen Ray, Brink Stevens, Debbie Rochon, Susie Lorraine, Jason Paul Cullum, Scott Goldberg, and many more. Be sure to check out It Came From Lake Michigan.com, or it might just come for you.
Howdy. Welcome back to DeadPit.com. I'm Uncle Bill again.
I'm a creep Kentuckian too.
And here's something a news story that I don't think is a very good idea. But once again, not much they come out with anymore is a very good idea, so why should this be indifferent?
Yeah, they don't really have any ideas.
The Tales from the Crypt series of films has not exactly ever been the greatest series. I don't know if you're familiar with, Bordello of Blood and Demon Knight. But
never seen them, but I heard they're shit.
Yeah, they're not the greatest films. But apparently they decided to make a third film in that trilogy of shit, which is called Ritual. And all that I know about that is that it's supposed to be along the lines of Wes Craven's Serpent and the Rainbow. And Dimension Films is going to be the ones to distribute it when it comes out. So I guess you can either look forward to that or not. But Tales from the Crypt is going to finally end its series of films with one last movie called Ritual. Thank God.
It's not going to be the end. Whenever somebody says that,
I pray to God it will.
I want to give you some news on the new Robert Kurtzman project, which you actually gave us last week. And I, being the big jackass that I am, I didn't mention it. But
yeah, you are dumbass.
You stupid. Anyway, we got word from Robert Kurtzman, former K&B man. We've had him on here before. And he's the current director of The Rage and has casted his next film, Buried Alive, which is part of Dark Lot Entertainment's Horror Chronicle series, is also set to star Terrence J., Leah Rachel, Jermaine DeLeon, Steve Sandvoss, Shannon Schlussel, Aaron Michelle Lockvitz, and the one and only Tobin Bell of the Saw movies.
Mm-hmm.
The cast is mostly up-and-comers because I've never heard of any of them, with the exception of Tobin Bell, who's known as Jigsaw.
Mm-hmm.
And from what I've read, Buried Alive is a story of a group of friends who make the unwise decision to spend the weekend at a hunting lodge, and things don't go well. Kurtzman is directing the script by the hunted screenwriter Art Montristelli, with Kurtzman's effects company Precinct 13 handling all the makeup effects on the entire Horror Chronicle series. And we're going to keep up with this because I know Robert Kurtzman's kind enough to actually send us emails.
Yeah. So we
keep us up to date. So yeah.
We do appreciate the people that support what we try to do, bring us information every now
That's
and
awesome.
Then. So anybody interested in Full Moon Pictures, Full Moon Entertainment, which I know there are some people, will be happy to know that along with their Puppet Master box set, which I'm pretty sure is out of print now, but they did it one time come out with, and I think that they had a Subspecies box set recently.
Yeah.
Now they're going to release the Trancers, the Definitive Collection DVD box set. So, Charles Band's making a shitload of money somehow, I guarantee it. There's only 500 of these in stock, and I would bet anything that they all sell out.
That's how they make money.
Yep.
Okay. There's limited boxes available.
It's limited until the second.
Bye,
it's limited until the second release when they, release them again.
That's the genius behind it, though. Yeah. It's limited. Every release is limited.
Yeah.
Just look at Anchor Bay when they come out with those limited edition tins.
Yeah, they
you still got hydroponic. His big dumb ass is buying every one. He's buying three or four of them. Think he's going to be able to make money on them. But anyway.
Yeah, he's not too smart, but he smokes a lot of weed. So that's right up there.
Yeah.
Okay. In other DVD related news, though, and this is something that me and you both can get behind, I'm sure.
Yeah.
Troma is releasing two new DVDs. And I believe they already released them. I think this was the first one is Zombiegeddon, which I know you've been wanting to see.
Comes out in July, I'm pretty sure.
Okay. Chris Watson's Undead from Hell Opus that featured just about every cult B-horror movie star, such as Tom Savini, Brink Stevens, Fliss Rose, Joe Estevez, Ron Jeremy, Matt Quigley, Edwin Neal, blah, blah, blah. You get the point.
Yeah.
On the DVD, you'll have director's commentary by the movie Zombies, deleted scenes, behind-the-scenes footage. Okay. This retails $14.95. And then the second one that they're releasing is August 8th. They released the Romeo and Juliet 10th Anniversary Edition 2-disc set.
Which is probably my favorite Troma movie, actually.
A lot of people's favorite Troma movie. Yeah. I put it right up there, too. There's four commentary tracks on this movie. One with Lloyd Kaufman and James Gunn. One with Gunn and Frank Thompson. And there's apparently...
Man, I was just thinking, though, Debbie Rochon in that movie.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. I was thinking about Tiffany Shepp is in that movie, too.
Yeah.
That's beside the point. Point is, those are some killer-ass DVDs that we're probably going to end up getting.
Yeah. I got quick word, though. And it's just up on IMDb. You don't have any info on it. Ruggiero Deodato is making another Cannibal movie. I'm going to try to say it. Cannibal Metropolitana.
Okay. Yeah, I had seen that the other day, but...
There's rumors that some of the same cast members are going to be in it that was in Cannibal Holocaust.
Well, they're still around, amazingly. I mean, a lot
I was actually watching, Grindhouse come up with that killer release last year that two discs set. And Gabriel York was on there, and he was sort of hinting that he was wanting to be involved in the sequel, which could be Cannibal Metropolitana. I know we haven't really talked about cannibal movies that much on here, but I myself am a really big fan of cannibal movies.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I know we've got Cannibal Ferox on, we watched that not too long ago. Mountain of the Cannibal God is fucking great. It's got like a little midget cannibal in it, and I just love it.
Isn't there a scene there where somebody fucks a pig?
Yeah, okay. It's like a fucking giant pig.
That's
just one of the oddest fucking things.
That movie will make you have like nightmares.
But I'll tell you though, what makes Cannibal Holocaust so fucked up is they actually do really fucking kill animals in that movie, which I really can't fucking like get behind that at all. But I think it really does help the movie.
Just the fact that we know that makes it, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, it gives it that fucking, why the hell am I watching this effect?
Plus, the makeup effects in that movie were amazing for the, you know, time period, too.
Yeah, and it was really, the music in it and the way it was filmed, it just worked. And it's the best cannibal movie. If you haven't seen it, check it out.
And I want to mention what, I always mention the DVDs that are getting ready to come out or have already come out. So, on May 2nd, which was last Tuesday, Meatweed Madness from Troma came out, Ritual from Dementia came out, Swarm from Lionsgate came out, and the BTK Killer from Lionsgate came out. Now, next week, there's a bunch of Masters of Horror, the single editions that are coming out. Chocolate, which I think was Mick Garris's, was it not?
Yeah, we're going to be talking a little bit about that.
Yeah, Incident on and off of Mountain Road, which I know was Coscarelli.
It's all Coscarelli's.
And there's going to be a two-disc one with Incident and Chocolate on it. So that's what's coming out in the next week.
Yep. I want to quickly mention, too, I know we was talking about this last week, and we're going to try to mention it often on here. If you want the Monster Squad DVDs or the Night of the Creep DVDs, here's who you can write to. For the Monster Squad, Mr. Sumner M. Redstone, care of Viacom, 1515 Broadway, New York, New York, 10036. If you want Night of the Creeps on DVD, write to Mr. Michael Linton or Mr. Bob Osher, care of Sony Pictures Entertainment, 10202 West Washington Boulevard, Culver City, California, 90232. Send nice letters. Don't be a threatening dickass. But we definitely want these movies out. And
the point is to send them so much mail that they can't possibly ignore it, and to get some attention, you know, paid to the fans. Yeah. So that's why emails won't work. You have to send actual mail.
That's true.
I got two things I want to mention real quick, because I said I was going to mention for a long time and I haven't yet on here. But for people who are actual fans of horror in general and who like, you know, masks and stuff like that, there's a studio that makes masks from all kinds of different horror films, but they don't officially license them from the films, but they look just as good. And I want to mention this, and it's, you can go to their website, www.deathstudios.com/masks. Now, the kind of mask I'm talking about is, like, they have the airport zombie from Dawn of the Dead, and they have, you know, the cemetery zombie from Zombie, and just a bunch of different, but they don't actually call them that. That's how they get away with it. They look exactly the same, but they don't call them by anything that has to do with the movies. So you can check that side
They're
out.
They're slick like that.
Yeah.
I got a couple of screenings I want to mention, and there's signings, and then I've got something else that we're going to try to add to the show every once in a while. First, Metropole NYC is back, folks. Monday, May 8th, Harry Kumel's Daughters of Darkness at 10 p.m. You can see that for free with a one-drink minimum. For more info, go to metropolenyc.com. There's also a debut world premiere of Savage Harvest 2, which we've talked about on here, for Monday, May 8th, 2006 at the New York International Film Festival, starting at 2 p.m. at the Village East Cinemas, NYC, in New York City, I guess. And more info on that, go to wickedpixel.com, and we really support those guys.
Yeah, Wicked Pixel Cinema. Yeah.
Great filmmakers. We got some news on a signing that's going to be at Dark Delicacies in Burbank.
We really support them, too.
We talked about the Masters of Horror DVDs with Mick Garris and Don Coscarelli. They'll both be signing those DVDs May 9th and May 10th. Horror starlet Adrienne Barbeau will be signing her new book, There Are Worse Things I Could Do. Dark Delicacies is located at 4213 West Burbank Boulevard in Burbank, California.
And I guess that that's all we have for the news.
Yeah, that's all the news. But I want to get something for all the DVD collectors out there. That you really want to get a part of this deal on Deep Discount DVD.
Oh, God, here we go.
I know we mentioned...
You're going to tell everybody this shit, and then I'm not going to be able to buy it because it'll sell out.
Well, that's just too bad because I told you about it earlier.
You can't do this to me.
You should have bought it earlier. Deep Discount DVD. Having a sale on horror movies. $4.99 for each of these. You can get a movie we talked about them remaking earlier, Chud, Cheerleader Camp, Dead Heat, Dario Argento's Inferno, Mountaintop Motel Massacre, Near Dark, the two-disc edition, Neon Maniacs, Parasite, Puppet Master vs. Demonic Toys, Return to Horror High, Shock, all the Sleepaway Camp movies, Society, Spontaneous Combustion, Cat and Nine Tails, another Argento movie, The Church, The Stuff, and much more. You go on Deep Discount DVD or go on our message board over at deadpit.com for more info. And I got in on this deal last night, and I just think it's fucking killer.
It is. So basically just go to Deep Discount DVD, you know, and read the first page from the sales section.
Yeah, and that's awesome.
So now what we're going to do is we're going to take you to our first installment of what will be known as
May of the Dead.
So, without further ado, here's our interview with Gary Clark, who played Private Steele in Romero's third film in the zombie trilogy, Day of the Dead.
Yeah, and we also want to mention that it's really not a traditional interview because it was basically, I mean, he was a great talker. He's probably one of the best talkers that we've ever interviewed.
This is probably the most information about, you know, what goes on behind the scenes of a movie that you'll ever hear in an interview.
Yeah, I mean, we get a few questions in, but he primarily controlled the whole interview, which is cool.
Yeah.
And you'll learn a lot of stuff. So check it out right now for me
of the Dead
on
deadpit.com.
So I guess we could start off by asking, how did you get involved in George Romero's Day of the Dead?
I got a call from a very dear friend of mine. It's a wonderful Australian actor named John Roddick. And John had a lovely wife named Nancy. Her last name was Hopwood. And Nancy was from Pittsburgh. Pittsburgh.
Mm-hmm.
Get the picture yet?
I'm starting to understand then.
Yeah, see? So John and Nancy, who lived in the New York metropolitan area, but John was Australian, Nancy was American, through my work in Knuckleman, the Australian play, I became very close to them, not only professionally, but socially. We became wonderful, wonderful friends in the sense that even to this day, I am godfather to their three boys. Two are musicians, and one is at his college in Pittsburgh called Point Park.
Mm-hmm.
And Nancy, of course, went to school with a gal named Christine Forrest at Rollins College in Winter Park, Florida.
Uh-huh.
And Christine Forrest is Christine Romero, George's wife. So, after all my good work in, let's say, Last of the Knucklemen and becoming professionally close to John and Nancy, and becoming friends, our families, we started, our kids hung out together. I'm the godfather of their three boys. And, you know, we've all got grown families now, and John unfortunately passed away at the age of 53 about 5 years ago. No, that's wrong, about 7 years ago. And Nancy says to me one day, she says, "Look, you know, there's a movie you ought to read for." I go, "Well, what's the movie?" And she says, "Well, you got to go meet George Romero, and you got to read for Day of the Dead." So Nancy Hopwood, you know, it, because she knew what was happening because of her relationship with George and Christine.
Mm-hmm.
And in New York City, I went in to meet George and Christine, and Nancy set it up. And I went in, and there's George, and great guy. George's a big man. I mean, I don't know if you know what George looks like now, but very thin now.
Yeah, he did look kind of.
Well, we're all very concerned, trust me. George is extremely thin. But George's a big, robust man, and I go in and I meet him. I go, God, I meet that Night of the Living Dead. Man, scared the bejesus out of me. I mean, God, it's great. And he has me read for Rhodes.
Mm-hmm.
Somehow, this is the genius of George. When all was said and done, I make an assumption here that you guys know the film well enough to know this, and hopefully you love it, because it's George's favorite film of all. It took a while. Critics weren't kind to it. It's got a great... It's not the original. You know, I don't know if you've ever seen it. You know, there, you do know that there was a very different version of Day that was never allowed to be shot.
Yeah, yeah.
Totally different movie.
Mm-hmm.
But I believe that this has the best story. I also believe overall it has the best acting, and I think George will tell you that now, too. There's some wonderful, rich characters in it, and George knew. I read for Rhodes, and Joe was, I think, then even living in Pittsburgh like Laurie. And, of course, he was based out of Pittsburgh, although originally I believe George is a New Yorker. But he's been based in Pittsburgh for years and does, you know, all the shooting there. And George somehow was able to figure out, we got this big guy, Gary Clark. He just read for Rhodes. But what would be better is a guy with a Napoleonic complex. Because
yeah.
If you look at Joe in that movie, and he's great, and he's ridiculous because he's got the bandoleros and the pistols that are bigger than his whole chest.
Yeah.
And he's got the attitude that goes with it, I think. And then you look at Steele, who's a lowly private, but who's really the leader of the men because they respect him. You look at Rickles, the late Ralph Marrero, and he looks up to Steele. As I always say to Joe when we're anywhere out on the circuit, And we do this little repartee because Joe's very funny and he's great with crowds and everything. He's like a carnival barker. And if I have to give any kind of retort, it's like, oh, yeah, who died like a soldier and who ran away in a golf cart? Who was the weasel that ran away? Who was the real soldier? Who was the one that hated the zombies the most, that he didn't want to become what he hated most? Thereby, when I cross myself with the gun and blow my brains out, the crossing of myself with the gun was not written. I said, George, can I make him a Catholic? And in the Catholic Church, suicide's a mortal sin.
Yeah.
But I thought through it and I said, there's going to be people in the audience, maybe 90% of them won't get it. 10% will understand what I'm trying to say, that the thing he hated the most was to become part of a living hell, and that the God that Steele believed in would be more merciful and forgive him for that act. Because if Steele didn't do that, he became what he hated most, which was a zombie.
Yeah.
And George said, hey, go with it. It's there. Now, don't ever watch that sci-fi version.
Oh, yeah. I think last Halloween, I saw part of it. I just thought
because the sci-fi version is looped with not our voices.
Yeah.
It is abominably edited. And when people call me up and say, hey, I just saw you on the sci-fi channel, I said, what do you think? That's not even see me. It's horrible.
Yeah.
And, you know, we've all been screwed out of residuals by the producers, and then he sold it, and everybody got screwed out of that movie, including George.
Yeah.
And it's a shame, because I, you know, when I first started going out a little bit and signing and meeting people, I see product from all over the world. I have met people who flew to Baltimore from Japan.
Yeah.
Germany. You guys know this.
Yeah.
I mean, fans are fans. They love you. I was amazed. And I'm saying, where's all this stuff coming from? And none of us are compensated for it.
Yeah. I think we did something on the show where, you know, they've got trademark and copyright sites on the internet and stuff. And George Romero, actually, I think he only owns the copyrights to one of his movies.
You're absolutely right.
Yeah.
You're totally correct. And if you go on the site called Ultimate Romero, read the letter I wrote.
Yeah.
Because I was afraid they wouldn't put it up because it's about almost 2 pages. And it's kind of like what I wrote in memoriam to Ralph and in memoriam to Richard. It's me talking. I'm not talking for anybody else. But it's like remembering back what it was like on the whole movie, and meeting the people, and how great it was to work with George. Because George is wonderful for an actor.
Yeah.
I mean, I've worked with Jonathan Demme. I've worked with Robert Redford, Ivan Reitman. And George is as good, if not better, than anybody, because he gives the actor free rein.
Yeah.
And in doing that, it's a more creative process. It's a give and a take. The set doesn't become tyrannical and uptight. It was wonderful. And if you read the letter I wrote, and I think you'll enjoy it. And because it's the way I talk, but not put this up unless you use the whole letter, because it's the key, and it's about us getting justice and somehow getting, finding a way to get the people who screwed us to own up and pony up. It's been 22 years.
Yep.
We wrote something.
Yep.
And there was all this ridiculousness with Contra. And if you read it, you'll see it. It's a real easy letter to read. If you have any questions on it, call me back. I'll explain it to you. But, I mean, Lori and I talk about it. And I think, well, Lori and I are going to try. Not try. We're going to do something about it. Yeah. I just hope in 22 years, hey, I don't know if there's a statute of limitations, because one of the things they said is you're going to sign away all rights to anything in the universe. Well, wait a minute. The VHF had just come into being. It was very, very new. And there was no DVD. It didn't exist.
Yep.
But Richard Rubenstein was a very shrewd man, and he screwed George. He screwed us. And then... Now, Richard still owns Dawn, I believe.
Yeah, he does.
But, however, our movie, Day, has now been passed on, not necessarily through Taurus Entertainment. Yeah, maybe it has, because that Taurus Entertainment apparently is these two brothers in L.A., the Doodlesons. Mm-hmm. And they have something to do with it now, and through Taurus Entertainment and them... And then they made some horrible thing. I saw it. I saw a German copy of it. Day of the Dead Contagion.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
What
yeah,
a piece of garbage.
Yeah. We really didn't know if Rubenstein had the rights, if he sold them.
He sold, well, to our movie, the way I understand it, but see, Lori and I are still delving into this. It wouldn't surprise me if he has his hand in here some way,
yeah.
But there is a history where... In 1990 or 91, he sold a certain percentage of the movie to the Doodlesons, and then later on, he sold the rest. I have some stuff. I have to get it out and go over it, and then I can give you guys a little more clarification on that part of it. It's more the legal stuff of how he did it, but he's very shrewd. Richard Rubenstein's a very wealthy man,
yeah.
And he screwed George, and he screwed every actor I think he's ever worked with. And that's my opinion.
Yeah, the same thing they did with the Day of the Dead. They're doing a Creepshow 3, the same people.
Yeah. I mean, talk to Greg Nicotero. He'll tell you. I mean, I've talked to Greg and Howard Berger. I mean, it's just obnoxious how he's... And it was a sad contract. I mean, I had a great agent. We all had great agents. We were all legit actors.
Right.
You know, Terry Alexander, Jarlath, me, Lori, Tim, Joe. You know, come on. You know... The first day we shot, they shoved something under our noses, and we signed it, and no big deal. And it turns out to be that little clause that maybe you're throwing away your rights to anything throughout the universe in perpetuity. Well, how can you sign something away that doesn't exist?
That's right, yeah.
So, you know, that's kind of... But anyway, it was coming for a soaker. That's through John Roddick and particularly Nancy Hopwood, John Roddick's wife, going to school with Christine and being very close friends even to this day. I meet George, I read for George in New York. I read for Rhodes. George has that innate way. So wait a minute, you know? Now, he didn't say that to me. I just know that's how he figured it out. He said, man, it's going to be great. I just always felt that Steele shouldn't have been a private. He should have been a sergeant because he's kind of more like a sergeant. But I figured he must have got busted back a couple times because he's such an idiot.
Yeah. You mentioned that. I agree with you about the great acting in the movie. It's probably the best of the...
I'm telling you. I think I really believe it. I mean,
Do you think the atmosphere might have, I know it was shot in a mine near Pittsburgh, you think that might have, you know, helped the acting a little bit?
Absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely. It was incredible because I don't know if I could ever have an experience like it again. To go to work Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, and Saturday, 6-day-a-week shooting schedule, which is not your norm. Your only day off was Sunday. And work 3 months straight.
God.
Go to work, literally get up at 4, and get out there at 5 o'clock in the morning, go through makeup with Tom Savini and his wonderful assistants, Nicotero, Kurtzman, and Berger,
mm-hmm.
Okay? And then remember, Greg was also in the movie as one of the soldiers.
Yeah.
And Savini, I mean, we all became really great friends through this thing. And it was that whole, and it really was, because I didn't get to go to Florida.
Plato mentioned something about that, too, that you and he and one other person were the only people that, you know, didn't get to, the main cast, that didn't get to fly out to Florida to do the scenes.
No, we all our work was done in that mine in Wampum, Pennsylvania, and you would walk down this manicured, well-lit, tiled corridor for 50 yards or so. Then you go into this mine. It had all these antechambers and anterooms, and some of the anterooms were finished with false drop ceilings, and the food was great. But you were working in a mine literally 15, 16 hours a day. And we started in the fall, and we finished, God, I want to say probably a week or two before Christmas. So we were there for 3 months, and I never saw the light of day, because we would go to work 4 or 5 in the morning and come home 10, 11 at night. Our day off was Sunday. Sunday for me was laundry day in Elwood City. I would go to Elwood City, leave the Holiday Inn, and I would just get in my car and go, because I decided to drive out, so I had wheels out there, and I would go over to Elwood City, do my laundry, and then come back to the hotel, and Joe Pilato's classic line, because Joe, we were all kind of Steeler fans, and Joe would go, Gary, you got a plate? And he'd be loaded down with food and wine. And we'd sit there and watch the Steelers, but Joe's classic line, Gary, do you got a plate? Because Joe's always worried about, you know, you should, he likes, he's a good guy. I mean, really, you know, wants you to, you know, relax on our day off. So we'd sit there, me and Joe, and watch the Steelers play in the Holiday Inn after I got back from doing my laundry over in the laundromat in Elwood City. But a lot of people got sick. A lot of people, you know, Greg's dad is a doctor, Dr. Nicotero. He may be retired now, but I just saw him again last year when I went to the premiere of Land of the Dead in Pittsburgh. But they had a doctor on the set who kind of took care of people, I think, because I didn't have to. I didn't get sick, but a lot of people got really sick. They thought it might have been because of the dust in the mine. It was a limestone mine.
Yeah.
And Ralph Marrero and I were driving around in a golf cart because, you know, there's golf carts used in the film.
Yeah.
And one day we had a little break. I said, Ralphie, come on, let's take a little drive around here. And we started driving down this one area of the mine we'd never been. We got stopped by a guard a little ways down. Guard says, where are you guys going? He says, well, you know, he says, you can't go down here. I said, why? He says, well, in the middle of this, you're inside a mountain. You're in the mine inside of a mountain. And he said, there's a huge lake back here, like acres. And if you go in that lake, it's so dark, you could be 1 inch from the side. If you hung on to it, it saved your life. The police about, you'll panic, you'll drown. So we don't need that. Turn around and go. So I turned around in the golf cart, went down another way. And all of a sudden, I start seeing boxes. It says that here's what these row on row of cardboard boxes say: U.S. military issue gas masks. It was also a storage place for some type of governmental records. And the third thing I'll never forget was unbelievable quantities of recreational vehicles, the kind that, you know, like a Winnebago, that you could live in. And they were all stored in this place. And at that moment, Ralph and I looked at each other and said, What are we really working in?
Mm-hmm.
Is this thing sitting on giant shock absorbers, maybe? It's really amazing. A lot of people never saw what Ralph and I saw, though, the government issue, with the boxes of gas masks. And I do know that people in the area probably know it. The government does store stuff. It is a storage area. Mm-hmm. And there were all these, like, RVs, which literally, you know, you could go live in them inside. You could live inside the cave inside the RV.
Yeah.
So, I mean, it was really weird, you know. But it was, I tell you what, of all the movies I've worked on, about 24 all over the country and Canada and stuff, but you know what? It was honestly because of George, because everything starts. If you want to look at Richard Rubenstein as the head, fine. But I didn't have a lot of contact with Richard. I'd like to have a lot of contact with him now.
Yeah.
And I really mean that seriously. And believe me, I may be 59 years old, 2 artificial knees, 2 titanium plates on my neck, but I can still take care of business.
Mm-hmm.
And it's my nature when you're 1 of 17 kids. But everything started with George because he was the head, and he made it such a wonderful work environment. If you really think about it, not exactly the best working conditions.
Yeah, really.
He made it such a joy to go to work, to invent, to create, and to eventually, I believe, you know, put on celluloid one of his better films. And I think, you know, until Land came out over the summer, we were the end of the trilogy. Mm-hmm. And, of course, Night will always be unique for what it is. It is grainy. It's black and white. And in some ways, I think, amateurish is not the right way, but you don't have a full complement of working professional actors, if you know what I mean.
Yeah, it was really low budget, I mean.
But the movie works. To this day, it works. It's a creepy, scary movie.
Mm-hmm.
And it's George. Stay scared. I mean, who knows it better than George? And it's a classic. It'll always be a classic. Then you have Dawn in the shopping center, and then you have Day. But I think if you really look at those three, you know, you've got some wonderful actors. Absolutely wonderful actors.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, Laurie. You got Joe. You got Tim. You got Jarlath came out of New York City. Terry came out of New York City. You know, we were all working. Stages. I mean, wonderful actors. Actors who brought real invention and imagination and creation to their characters. The only thing I would say, is if you watch the movie, which I do sometimes, there's a couple places I think if George could go back, you could maybe edit it a little tighter in places. There's a couple of scenes that, you know, because the movie was accused of being, you know, too verbose, too wordy, too talky, too this, too that.
Yeah.
And I'm sorry, Roger Ebert, and, you know, whatever, but it's got a good story. It's got a good backstory, even though it's not the original script that George wanted to shoot, but most people don't know that, unless you're a true fan. But for the movie and the script that was shot, it's a damn good movie with damn good acting, and is it flawless? No, of course not. But I think if you talk to George, I think you would admit it's probably his favorite one of the trilogy. And now we have Land, you know, I saw Land out, you know, over the summer. Good movie. It's interesting, though, when you talk to a lot of the hardcore fans, very interesting the reaction you get.
Yeah. You mentioned people in the mine getting ill.
Yeah, they got sick.
Yeah. I'd heard a lot of rumors about people getting really sick for the, you know, Joe Plato's dead scene where they use the pig guts and stuff.
Yeah, right.
Were you around for that scene?
Yeah, well, what I did is, you know, because you got your death day.
Yeah.
And the day you died was devoted. I love this about George, too. In other words, I got a whole day to do my death scene. Joe, you each got, anybody who died, like we did, it was your day to die.
Yeah.
And you were going to work with Savini and Greg, and you were going to have a ball doing it. Yeah, I wanted to go out there. I didn't go out for the whole day, but I went out for a couple hours because I knew I was going to have to do it next, too. But mine was a little easier, you know, squib pack, and,
yep.
You know, where the gun, of course, where the gun I'm firing, you think what happened to Bruce Lee's kid. You know, we had an armor, we had a very good armor, so when you got those weapons, when I'm firing those weapons in the cave, those are just really blanks and wads and stuff like that, but, you know, you can get hurt. But when I blew my brains out, that was all done electronically because I had a blood pack on the back of my head, a squib. So that's done electronically. But, yeah, Joe had a lot of stuff that they probably went to the butcher to get.
Yeah, I heard it's mostly pig intestines.
Yeah.
Heard somebody unplugged the refrigerator.
Oh, yeah. You mean make it a little more putrid?
Yeah.
I will tell you this. I mean, I got into it. I saw what was happening. But I didn't stay for the whole day because it's a long day.
Yeah.
It's a long day. You know, Joe had to go down in like a... you know, like a fake floor, you know, because you only see the top half of his body, and then the lower half is laying out on the floor. Joe got him.
Yeah. Which I actually had heard that line was ad-libbed, and I kind of wanted to ask, because there is
a lot. Yeah, we know it was. Joe invented the line.
Yeah. But there's a lot of dialogue in that film. You mentioned that, and I was just wondering that how much of that is actually ad-libbed?
Meaning what?
From your point of view.
Well, most of it is scripted, but I mean, I believe, it's just my opinion, but I think it plays. I believe the actor exists to serve the writer. You're there to serve the writing, to serve the script.
Mm-hmm.
You have to make that come alive through you, through your character. Do I have some ad libs? Yeah, but I would say at least 90% of what I did is totally scripted. What, you know, I don't like to call it ad libbing when you. For instance, Steel has a maniacal laugh. That was my invention. Steel, you know, with the pus bag, brains of shit, you know,
yeah.
Fucking A, and, need to? Yeah. You know, in the Bible, you got a friend, Matthew 26:15. So I have under my face, bang, you're dead.
Yeah.
Now, here's the key to that. The key to making that work, think of the situation. You remember the situation for that line?
Yeah, that was probably one of my favorite parts of the movie, where Riggs tells you to shoot Blair Cardell's character.
Well, Joe, yeah, right. Rhodes says, and you know, here's the and believe me, the real soldier, Steel, big, strong, tough guy, but a real soldier, a leader of men. Rickles looks up; they all look up to Steel. We all know Rhodes is off his rocker. Rhodes is Napoleon. He's got that short man's complex, that egomaniacal thing. But Steel, shoot that woman. And what does Steel do? Bang! You're dead! Because he doesn't want to kill her.
Yeah.
Two, he thinks Rhodes is joking, and if he isn't, he's hoping he can make it into a joke.
Yeah.
That line doesn't work any other way.
Yeah.
If you really think about it, that line does not work any other way. Now, who figured out how to say that line? Was me.
Mm-hmm.
And I did it in one take. Because people say all the time, love that line.
Yeah.
You know what I get from women? Women will come up to me and they go, God, you were a real pig.
Yeah.
And then when they meet me, you know what they say? Gary, you're the nicest guy here. Because you're so nice to people. You treat all the fans good. I said, well, wait a minute. If I was Steel at Horrifying,
mm-hmm.
24 hours a day, where's the acting?
Yeah, really.
There's no acting. So I love that. Go, you were a real pig.
And I think even that was the intention. I think Romero referred to you in the script as he wanted you to be pigs. I mean,
yeah. Well, George's take on the soldiers, of course, is, you know, it's not really necessarily the nicest take.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, he doesn't hold the military in high regard. And, of course, the battle is between them and the scientific community. And, of course, I mean, God, was Richard Liberty great in that, too. Oh,
yeah.
My God. And, of course, Howard. Howard is, as Bob. I mean, it's just great. You know, that whole exploratory thing. It was just, I got to tell you guys, I wish I could go back and make it tomorrow. I wish we were all back there right now and caught in a time warp, because living in the Holiday Inn was not an unpleasant experience. Going out to the mine, which maybe should have been, was not, because the food was actually great. We had great food, plenty of it. And for being out there 3 months, by the end of the second week, I knew 90 people's names.
Mm.
I knew every one of them. I knew Bamba. I knew Nikki. I knew them all. I knew Rolf. I knew Stewart. I knew...
Natalka! Natalka!
That was the way Ralph's name saying the makeup girl. Natalka! She was Russian. The late, great Ralph. I loved him. Oh,
yeah.
God bless him. Wonderful, wonderful actor. And a playwright, too. Died too young.
I noticed, though, they did the Dawn of the Dead remake, and they allowed some of the original cast members to come back in that. And I know they're working on a Day of the Dead remake. Have you been contacted to make
it? Don't really know much about it. And you know what? I will actually believe it when I see it. And it's interesting because now you guys can maybe help me. Did you hear about who's supposed to direct it?
Steve Miner.
Yeah, okay, Steve Miner lives, it's very funny. I met Steve once or twice, but not in the business. I live in Wilton, Connecticut. Steve Miner lives in Westport, Connecticut, and probably goes back and forth to Hollywood. It's interesting because, no, I have not been contacted, not haven't heard anything about it, and I presume if they're remake of Day, I'm going to wish them good luck, but be very interesting because I don't know if I'd be interested in. I don't think they're going to call me to play Steel, do you?
No, but I mean, like, you know, in Dawn of the Dead remake, they had, like, small roles for Ken Foree and, Tom Savini. They just made small cameos and
things
like that.
No, I wouldn't be interested because, you know what? There'll never be the day that I made with Laurie, George, and those guys. And if these Doodlesons are behind it, which I got to believe they are.
Yeah.
And, you're going to hear from a few of us.
In general, though, we really don't like remakes of anything, you know.
I think usually remakes stink anyway. I'll tell you something. You mentioned Dawn. I saw Dawn, the remake.
Yeah.
And it's interesting that, you know, I watch that movie, it's not the you know what it reminds me more of? It actually reminds me more of a movie I really love, but it's not Dawn. Is did you ever see Escape from New York?
Oh yeah, Carpenter. Yeah.
Because of the pace of the movie, of the remake, it's much more like that than it is the original Dawn. It's not positive and it's not negative. It's a totally different movie.
Yeah.
The one I loved was Shaun of the Dead.
Oh, yeah, that's Edgar Wright, and that's a good movie, actually.
Yeah, I love that movie because it was kind of a spoof. And then when I went to Pittsburgh, Simon Pegg walked up to me. And he said, "Gary, I've always wanted to meet you. I grew up watching you." And he was great. You know, we're sitting there, and Simon Baker, and they were wonderful. It was really wonderful.
They try to do something a little bit different with it, at least. I mean...
Yeah, no, absolutely.
Rehashing the... You know,
no, and when I watched the New Dawn, I'm just saying, you almost can't look at it as a remake because it fails as a remake, I think, because it's not really true. It's a different type of a movie. It's a different pace.
Yeah.
See if you can lock into what I'm really saying. It's a totally different movie. Doesn't make it worse. It's a different kind of movie. You can't compare it to Dawn. You can't compare it if George didn't shoot it.
Yeah.
You can't compare it to a George Romero film.
Which is exactly why I just don't see the point in all these remakes.
Thank you. Yeah. So many people just don't get it.
Yeah, but it looks like it's going to happen. The day remake, that is. But.
See, you guys are closer to this because I know you. Now I heard this. I did hear this. I do know that day is that contagium. Yeah, please. But yeah. I did hear about Steve Miner because Steve Miner is fairly local to where I live. I met Steve once or twice. Haven't seen him in years, actually. I would say, you know, what would you say? I'd say Steve's probably a B or C list director. But
I mean, he directs mostly in the horror genre.
Right. No, he's done some great stuff. I understand that. Yeah. But now, do you know if they've attached a cast to the movie?
That I don't think, no. But generally speaking, when we look at the stuff that we look at to see if, you know, they're going to make a remake, when they have the poster art and stuff come out, that generally means it's on for the remake.
Yeah, it's supposed to come out next year, I believe.
Next year.
Yeah.
It's amazing, though. See, we've all heard that. We know about Miner. But when I say to people, do you know anything about casting or anything? You know, I got to call Greg Nicotero tomorrow. I'm going to find out if he does, because he's in L.A. Mm-hmm. I wonder if he's heard anything or he knows anything about that.
I'd be really interested to know about that movie, too.
Yeah, no, I would. I mean, I can't, you know, that means you're going to have a Bub character, and I don't think anybody...
If they stay that true to the original film.
I hear Bub is going to be in the remake.
And I don't think you're going to get anybody to play as good as Howard did.
Howard was great. I can't imagine that.
Howard was so good. So good. He brought so much to it.
I can't imagine any of the cast being replaced in that film.
It's hard. I mean, for the true hardcore fans who really... And again, it's George Romero. It's George Romero. George is genre.
Yeah.
George is the godfather of this.
And also all the, you know, the great gore and stuff. You're not going to have that.
No. Now, you remember the movie, what was it, 28 Days Later or something?
Yeah.
Okay. You see, a lot of people like that. A lot of people who were really, I think, with us in our feelings, they took it for what it was, but even George will tell you, zombies can't move like that.
That's right.
So we're kind of purists, right, guys?
Yeah.
No, no. And I'm just serious. So, you know, for whatever. And I mean, a lot of people did like the movie, and I know it, and I saw it. And I said, well, it's okay. It's a different movie. It's not George. No. George is the man. We love George. But you work with George and become, you know, I guess biased or, you know, maybe very protective in a way. And maybe it's because all of us are kind of, you know, at least with our film particularly, and I have a feeling with some of the others too, not only from his point of view, but we've all been screwed to a certain degree, greater or lesser, and in the case of Day, greater.
Yeah.
We've been screwed, financially screwed. And every time they show that abomination on sci-fi, I don't watch it, but when people call me, oh, you're on, nah, I said, no, I'm not. Well, you know, what, you see me Married to the Mob, or you watch A Quick Change with Bill Murray? Yeah, that's me. You know, it's me looping, you know. Clint flew me out when I had a loop on,
Pink Cadillac.
Cadillac, and, you know, you get paid to loop it so that shit, the clean version, becomes crap. But it's you doing it.
Yeah.
And you get paid for it. That's not my voice. That's not, I don't know who's, and it almost sounds to me like when the men are speaking, they got one guy to do everybody's voice.
I think that's probably what it was. I mean, I actually did
some kind of doing those Italian movies, sort of.
Oh, I got to tell you guys, I tell you, Richard Rubenstein, he doesn't want to be in a room with me. He really doesn't.
Yeah.
But what I'd rather do is, you know, and I certainly don't have his money to fight it legally, but if, you know, Lori, I mean, with SAG, I mean, SAG, our union, I pay my dues, you know. I mean, I'm fully vested. I mean, I'm not some Johnny come lately. And between Lori and me, and we've been kind of working on something. Yeah, it might be 22 years later, but I'm sorry. That's just categorically wrong.
Mm-hmm.
You should be able to butcher the film and then screw everybody on technology that's out there now. And I'm seeing stuff and signing product and autograph and stuff I've never seen before with my visage on it.
I just wonder how many people in that cast, do you ever talk with, like, Joe Pilato or?
I talk to Joe all the time. I talk to Lori all the time. I talk to Tim all the time. Until a couple of years ago, I talked to Terry Alexander because Terry was living right near me, and then he got divorced and moved to L.A., and he's in L.A., and periodically I would run into Jarlath. Haven't seen Jarlath in about 9 years. But, you know, if I really wanted to find him, you know, God willing, he's still with us.
Yeah, he's doing a play right now, I think.
Yeah, and he's a wonderful actor.
Mm-hmm.
What is stage? If that's all we're famous for, that's fine.
Mm-hmm.
But these are good actors. All good actors.
Well, yeah,
because we've always been. It's one thing about the, I won't mention particular people, but I've seen, even with some of George's other films, I've met other actors who have a little bit of attitudes.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I haven't mentioned who, but I'm just. Dead people to a T. I don't know. People who've met us, I think when they really meet us, they know what we're about. We're real people, and you know, we love our fans. We treat them right.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you know, I enjoy talking about it. You know, whether you buy something or not, if anybody doesn't matter, just talk to me about the film. I enjoy it. Hey, Gary, you know, remember when you were Steel? Some people just say, "Hey, Steel." You know, it's great.
Yeah. When did you first get contacted to do conventions and stuff like that?
You know what? I'll tell you what happened. Interesting story. I avoided them like the plague for years. Tom Savini, I used to run into Tom in New York years ago. He said, "You should do this, man." Because, you know, he does them as the special effects guy and the makeup guy, and he goes all over with that. And you know, Tom's got a nice little thing going. He's still based out of Pittsburgh.
Yeah.
I said, I think he should be very proud of the fact that he is the mentor. His student has surpassed him.
Oh, Nicotero?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
And so I think Tom should be very proud of that. And then you see something like Dusk to Dawn, which I happen to love, and you see them sitting together, and there's Greg, who looks like one of the Allman Brothers, sitting next to Tom, but Tom is sex machine, you know, with the penis pistol. And, you know, I mean, Tom's great. Lives in Pittsburgh, still in Bloomfield, you know, the Italian part of Pittsburgh, and he has a ball, but...
The thing I noticed about Savini so much is that he never charges at conventions.
Well, he has a way of doing something. Tom works it a little differently. You know, I don't know if he gets a fee up front to go.
Yeah, I imagine he'd have to do that.
See, because trust me, he's not going to drive all that way and unload all that stuff for nothing, because I know Tom real well.
Yeah.
But what happened was a guy called me, I think I may have told you this Tony Timpone guy from Fangoria.
Yeah, the editor-in-chief of Fangoria.
Yep, well, you know what? I don't even know if I ever met the guy. I must have, but I don't remember him. But all I know is he wrote me a beautiful letter. He called me up. He said, "Could you come in to New York?" And this would have been, I'll say, 97, 98. All my kids were basically in high school, you know, from freshman to senior. And he said, "We're doing a show Friday to Sunday at the New York Hotel, catty corner to Madison Square Garden. And we'd love you to come in. Joe is flying in from L.A. Lori is coming in from Pittsburgh." And I didn't think anything of it. I brought nothing. I didn't bring anything. No pictures, nothing. Lori had pictures. Joe had pictures. We went there. There were other – I saw, you know, Clint Howard was there, Ronnie Howard's brother, because he does a lot of that stuff. There were some people there, but it was interesting that I just brought my whole family in. I don't know why, but I was glad I did, because – by the end of that day, riding back on the train like 10, 12 hours later, it didn't matter that Daddy had done Broadway, off-Broadway, Broadway. Daddy had worked with Bill Murray and the kids. You know, once in a while when I shoot locally near the end of a movie when my kids were young, I would always say, come on down for a day, you know, meet Jonathan Demme or Michelle. And they'd have a ball. I would always include him in that way. I wouldn't do it constantly, but, I mean, Bill Murray actually babysat my oldest kid, who's now bigger than me, and he's a strapping 25-year-old living and working in Ilmit, South Carolina. Bill babysat him, and Tony Shalhoub, who's Monk, played pinball with him, and you know, while I was doing Quick Change with Jason Robards that night. But what validated my career for my children was seeing how many people knew me as Steele and thrusting stuff under my nose for 8 hours, sitting next to Laurie and Joe, and then Joe, Laurie, and I looking at each other at the end of the day going, you think somebody's getting screwed here? And, I mean, I signed stuff I had never seen in my life. It was the first time I'd ever seen one of those laser discs, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Never saw one before. And they say the quality on those is pretty good, but I guess you need a special machine to play it.
Yeah, you have to have a laserdisc player as well.
I mean, it looks like a 33 1/3, you know, LP.
Mm-hmm. That's exactly what it is.
And
a platinum record, sort of.
Yeah. So that's kind of how I did it. I went in, and my career got validated when my oldest boy says, "Dad, you're not going to believe it. All these people want to see you and meet you and Joe and Laurie." And from Day of the Dead, and the line is, you know, on the mezzanine level, and it goes down the stairs, in the lobby, around the block. And, I mean, this movie validated my career more than anything I've ever done for my children. And, I mean, they've seen me in other stuff. But it's the reaction of people and how positive it is and how wonderful the fans are. They really are. They're wonderful fans.
Mm-hmm.
I've made some great friends in the last couple of years. So I did that in the late 90s. And, you know, nothing came out of it. And I don't think Tony Capone ever said thank you. It was really great when we were in an auditorium with about 800 people, and Joe and Laurie and I were asked to talk off the top of our head about kind of like, you know, we're doing.
Yeah.
And then somebody asked us to do the scene in the mine, and Joe and Laurie kind of had a little trouble just kind of getting back to it. So I said, come here. And we talked for 2 minutes, and we did the scene, and everybody gave us a standing O, and they loved it. And it's great when people... And this is what I learned, that a lot of fans know your lines better than you do, and they still, you know, they yell them out to you, you know.
Yeah, at the convention, the horrifying convention we were at in 2004,
yeah.
Blotto would start to do those lines just for certain people that would come up and ask him to do it.
Right.
And then you would finish it, or
you got it.
Laurie would finish the...
Oh, no, absolutely. And he'd go, who's running this monkey farm?
Which I thought was one of the coolest things about that convention for me.
I'm glad you guys were there, because that was number two for me. Because after the Tony Timpone thing, which was a wonderful experience, just the experience, that's what it was,
yeah.
For me and my family, and seeing Joe and Laurie, and just the whole thing, and being blown away by it, that was, let's say, 97, 98. It wasn't until Horrifying, which I thought, with the one in Baltimore, which that was a great convention.
Mm-hmm.
But a month or two before that, we had gone out to Chicago to do one in Chicago, and that was the first one that I had ever done, you know, in a more formal way, that, you know, you're going to be a guest there, and, you know, and that was when I saw George for the first time in like 18 years.
Yeah.
And he came up behind me and gave me this big hug. And then I always loved doing the Q&As. It was George and Joe and Laurie and Tim and doing this Q&A. It was great, man. It's so great being up there with him. And, you know, we always love doing them because we seem to have a lot of people will come up after and say, you know, more so than a lot of people, they say, you guys really have a good time with it. You really answer the questions we ask. And you get real personal and, you know, you open up. And that's what it's all about. But, yeah, so I only went out in, June of 2004. Tom is, of course, always doing these, but he's in a different, you know, ballpark. I mean, he does a lot of things, but he goes, it's Tom bringing in the heads and the special effects and the blood and the this and the that. And I mean, I don't know if there's a market for Day anymore. I mean, can we do this for 10 more years, 3 more years, 5 more years, where there'll be special promoters? I mean, there's got to be promoters somewhere in America who have never bought the dead people out.
Yeah.
I mean, listen, we did Baltimore, Phoenix. You know, of course, they flow. The one in Phoenix was Mike Roden, the same guy that did Horrifying. That was really sad because Mike Roden got talked into doing what he does very well in Baltimore. And that's a great show. Well, corporate got wind of how well he did there, and they brought him out to Phoenix. not this past year, year before. And but it was like right after the horrifying where you guys were at. It was that Halloween.
You know, I actually know somebody that went to that.
Well, you know what? I got off the airport with my wife in Phoenix. Saw a great kid, a musician from Baltimore. I said, Carolyn, this thing's going to be great. And we go out to this beautiful facility, and tons of people. I mean, you know, let's see, Sid was there, and Bill, and you know, all us guys, and Galen, and I mean, it was dead. Huh. And Mike Roden was all pissed off, and what had happened was he took it out of Hunt Valley. He took it out of the Baltimore area where a lot of people drive, okay, because even if it's a, you know, 6-7-8 hour drive, it's still easy to get to. You go out west, it's a little different. And then you had this wonderful, beautiful, I mean, we were like staying in the Taj Mahal, but we were like, you know, it was a long haul to get there. It was a Halloween weekend, which we thought would be great, but guess what? There were two, like, Metallica concerts in town that weekend. Mm-hmm. And basically, you know, Mike took a bath. I mean, poor Bob. It was the first one Howard had done. And at the end of the weekend, I said, Howard, don't judge it by this. There's people at the Horrifying in Baltimore, which I was just at, you know, a few months before, where people were looking for you, and you weren't there. So, you know, there's the one in Chicago, like, you know, if it's far enough away, you know, hey, you know, you want to have an airplane ticket, you want to have some hotel, you know, maybe a little per diem, and then, you know, some people you get a big guarantee, some small, and you know what, some people, if the people are decent enough, watch this, hey, you talk to me, and you work something out.
Yeah. I noticed, though, I mean, pretty much all the big conventions are in the Northeast, so that's probably where the...
It seems like, yeah, but you know, the Chicago one, which is the first one I ever did, where I saw George and everybody after like 18, 19 years. I drove out there. That's 900 miles. You know why I drove? I took my wife. My kid went to Purdue at the time, which is right south of Chicago. So I said, come on, we'll kill two birds with one stone. I've never had a honeymoon. I've been married 26 years. So we kind of had a ball doing it. You know, it's a 15-hour drive out, a 15-hour drive back. We went out there for 3 days. Then went up to northern Michigan to a horse farm up there where we know some people. And we had a little fun with it. So there's all kinds of ways to do these things. Everything is negotiable. And, you know, it depends who you talk to, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And if you guys need anybody's phone numbers, if you're interested in talking to anybody, let me know. I'll make the call for you. I'll call you back. And, like if you wanted to talk to Joe or Lori and I talked to them, you know, I'd be very surprised if they would say no.
We'd love to talk to either one of them. And actually, Nicotero, we'd love to talk to anybody from K&B.
Yeah, I'm going to talk to Greg real soon. Yeah, probably tomorrow. And I can always ask him. And, you know, Greg is real busy, but
yeah,
I mean, but he's also a real good guy. I mean, he's very different from Tom in that way. You know, I mean, Tom can, you know, I mean, I've seen shows where Tom can put people off. There are people, believe it or not, that get put off by Tom. I don't, because I have a great relationship with him. I know Tom. But I've seen people get put off by Tom, whereas Greg is just as magnanimous as can be.
Yeah.
But I think Tom should be very proud that the student has surpassed the mentor. It's the greatest compliment I think a teacher can be paid is your student has become beyond you.
Hi there. This is Judith O'Day of the original George A. Romero's Night of the Living Dead. And you're listening to DeadPit.com.
Welcome back here to DeadPit.com. I'm a creepy Kentuckian.
I'm Uncle Bill.
And we again want to thank G. Howard Klar for that interview. It was the first of many here on May
of the Dead.
And next week's guest on May
of the Dead
is
Judith O'Day, who, as you all know, played Barbara in the original Night of the Living Dead.
She is the guest next week. As a matter of fact, we just talked to her today.
Mm-hmm.
And it was a wonderful interview. She's a really nice lady. And that's next week on DeadPit.com.
You will get to hear a lot of, and we've learned a lot of things from doing these interviews too, a lot of behind-the-scenes stuff from each one of these dead movies, so these interviews.
Right.
Because there's some really informative things that we've learned here.
That's true.
Need to check these out.
So we're going to run through a couple comments that we got and one question that I wanted to talk about on here. From Scott W. Perry, who is another independent filmmaker. This opinion is a bit biased, being that I know both David and Scott, but I enjoyed the roundtable discussion very much. Having spoken with both privately on such topics, it was good to hear them again and said with such passion. He mentioned, now I'm going to go back and count how many times Scott refers to himself as an independent filmmaker. Also, another one you might want to do is go back to the original Scott Goldberg interview and count how many times he says,
You know. I swear, if that was a drinking game, by halfway in the interview, you'd be shit-faced if you had to take a drink.
You'd be puking all over the place, yeah. I'm just telling you.
But, yeah, it would make an interesting drinking game. You'd have to be a hardcore alcoholic. As far as the round table goes, though, I would say that, and this is odd, too, but by far, that's the most direct, like, response I've had for any show we've ever done.
Yeah.
For me, as far as email-wise, it goes.
Yeah.
People saying that they liked it, though.
Yeah, and Scott actually mentioned that he has a movie that he's working on known as Unadulterated. And it's a simple tale of a woman having an affair with a man, and his wife doesn't take it too kindly. He mentioned it's playing at the Long Island Film Festival tonight, actually. You can check that out. If you want more info on that, go to slickdevilentertainment.com. He also mentioned he's writing a screenplay for The Forest Hills, which Scott Goldberg is going to be supposedly working on here in Kentucky at some point.
Which we're both looking forward to that.
Yeah.
So anyway.
Axlish actually mentioned to us, I enjoyed the roundtable discussion. It's a nice addition to the Dead Pit Library. He mentioned that he has types of conversations like that with his friends, you know, back in the day, except they were more excited than we were disappointed, which if it was back in the day, in the 80s, I could definitely see that, actually.
That would make sense back then.
Crawling K also actually asked, I'm not familiar with David Stagneri. I really enjoyed his enthusiasm for the genre. What has he done or been involved with? Well, he was actually a key figure in Christopher P. Garitano's Horror Business, which is coming out this summer.
Mm-hmm.
You can finally see it. I know you all love it, actually. And he actually is an independent filmmaker, too. And he directed the film Catharsis, which we reviewed on here a few weeks back. And also know that he used to be involved in music in New York and stuff like that. But I know he's just a lifelong horror fan overall.
That's what he is. I mean, he's a fan that has made good and is going on to make independent horror films right now.
Yeah.
And he's a one opinionated motherfucker, I'll say that.
Yeah.
And in a good way.
And in my opinion, you definitely need to watch for that name, because I do think that he's got a lot of talent when it comes to making movies.
Mm-hmm.
I want to mention a couple comments we got on the Tiffany Shepis interview, which is a couple weeks ago. LW Addict mentioned, I just barely finished the episode with Tiffany Shepis. Have to say it's probably the best interview yet. Either she's the bomb or you guys are really fine-tuning your craft. I'm thinking it's a combination.
No, she was the bomb. Generally speaking, see, when we interview people, it's not as if, like, you have to be, like, a brain surgeon to do these kind of interviews. The basic thing we like to do is just ask us, you know, a basic open-ended question and let them talk. It just so happened that Tiffany Shepis was awesome at, you know, conversation.
Yeah, and she actually, unlike a lot of people that do interviews, she spoke her mind and actually has an opinion about some things, which is refreshing, actually. And she was the bomb, I'm going to mention.
Yeah, she was. Still and, is.
Yeah, she will always be the bomb to me. Scab Boy, though, he mentioned the Tiffany Shepis. He loved the Tiffany Shepis interview, and he found it hard to believe that we've never seen Bloody Murder Part 1. He said that, you know, the movie's crappy, but it's so watchable. And I'm not for sure if I've not seen it. I don't remember it. I know I've seen Part 2, simply because Tiffany Shepis gets naked in it.
Mm-hmm. I've never seen Part 1. I probably would see it if it came on direct or something, but I won't buy it, I'm sure.
Yeah. But I just want to mention to everybody that wants to send us comments and stuff to read on the show, you can post them over at the deadpit.com message board, or you can email them to us through MySpace, myspace.com/deadpit, or Uncle Bill's is over at...
Oh, on MySpace, yeah, / horror.
Horror whore.
Horror whore, yeah.
Yeah.
But, yeah, we do appreciate questions because we actually like to, you know, try to figure some things out, do research for the show and stuff.
Yeah, and another thing I quickly wanted to mention on here, Bill over at Code Red DVD emailed us with this info, and I thought it was pretty cool. And he was wondering, you know, exactly where we got the name Dead Pit. And if we got it from the 1989 zombie movie known as The Dead Pit, which is just a weird coincidence, actually.
Yeah. No.
It's not. It didn't come from that. But the movie, and I do remember the movie now, actually. I remember the video cover with the, you push a button and the eyes would glow a little while and make a noise. The Dead Pit, which is a Brett Leonard movie, they got the rights to that movie, and they're going to release it in an upcoming DVD. We can mention that.
Yeah, but it doesn't have anything to do with us.
Yeah.
We weren't involved in that anyway.
So we're going to take another quick break, and we'll be back with DVD reviews and close out the show again here on DeadPit.com. Howdy, folks. I'm the Creepy Kentuckian.
And I'm Uncle Bill.
And we are here to invite you to check out the DeadPit.com archive section.
We have interviews with such horror luminaries, including...
Melissa Rose.
Kevin Tenney.
Tiffany Shepard.
Alan Danziger.
This is Tuesday night.
Who's gonna obey the whole rules?
These fuckers are crazy.
Check all that out and more over at www.deadpit.com. Welcome back to DeadPit.com. I am the Creepy Kentuckian.
I am Uncle Bill.
And we got a pretty good assortment of DVDs here to start with. I know the one I want to start with is probably my favorite one of the week that I watched. And it's known as Means to an End.
Mm-hmm. I just got to watch this one today. It's a short film.
Yep.
And I think you've got the actual like short film screener of it. But it's on Fangoria's Blood Drive 2.
Yep.
It just came out recently.
It's a film directed and starring Jake Hamilton and Paul Soleil.
Mm-hmm. It's basically the story of two special effects creators who can't get a movie made to save their lives. So they decide that the best way they can do that is by actually beating the piss at each other and cutting each other up. And like, instead of using makeup effects, just basically destroying their own body.
And filming it and filming making a movie out of it.
So... they go through all this, and the makeup effects in the actual, you know, movie itself are pretty good, you know. And they go through all this, then they take it to an agent, and he turns them down, and he says that unless the final scene kills, then he's not going to take it.
Yeah.
So it turns out that in the end, the final scene does quite literally kill.
Yeah.
And that's all.
And it's a really short movie. It's only like 13 minutes in total.
Mm-hmm. But, I'll tell you something about the movie
that
I really liked a lot is... these guys obviously know a lot about horror because they spend most of the time throughout the short in T-shirts like Dawn of the Dead or Pieces
Zombie.
Or Zombie. And then they got posters of Cannibal Holocaust in the background and Toxic Avenger
and
all that
kind of stuff.
Yeah, so it's obvious that they like the genre at least.
Yeah, and I think that's, you can definitely tell when you watch the movie. I mean, they just come off as a couple of fans that got a hold of the camera.
Yeah.
But it's a fun movie and there's not been anything like it before. It's really a dark comedy more than anything, and I really, really recommend it. And go check out Fangoria Blood Drive. And if Fangoria does anything right, it's doing these Blood Drive DVDs because, I mean, it's the best way to get independent filmmakers' stuff out there.
They're obviously doing something right because I read this too recently that Synapse is going to take over that format and release their own kind of like, you know, series of short films on DVD.
But if you want to check out where you can get the movie, you can go to meanstoanendthemovie.com. And I highly recommend this movie. It's a really fun flick.
So I guess in every show, almost every show, we have a couple of good ones, a couple of bad ones.
But this might be the worst one.
Yeah. This little gem comes to us from Brain Damage Films. And, you know, I've... reviewed a couple of their movies on here before. I think I reviewed one called In Exchange a few weeks back. And then this one is called Tear It Back to You.
There is a lot of tear.
Okay, how do we explain this exactly?
I would explain it if somebody gets a hold of the script that's completely worthless, doesn't have any redeeming qualities to it at all, somebody gets a budget of about, I don't know,
$500.
Somebody hires a bunch of their neighbors to act in the fucking movie. And this Tarrant Baxter U, which is Jeff Burton, for some reason allowed this movie to be made. That's what it is, okay? Tell them about the basic plot of the movie, if there is one.
Well, basically, there's a professor at Baxter University, which is where the name comes from, who comes across some kind of a amulet that brings back El Chupacabra.
Oh, God.
Which is the Mexican goat sucker, I think.
And you know something that's funny, too? Whenever you see the Chupacabra or whatever the fuck it is.
El Chupacabra, yeah.
They play that little theme that was in the Hawaii episode of Brady Bunch.
I'll tell you something else I know about.
Do you remember that?
Yeah. They ripped the shit out of the Halloween soundtrack throughout this whole movie.
Yeah.
Like, there's all kinds of... But anyway, that's besides the point. Anyway, the professor gets a hold of the amulet, and all of a sudden people start... Well, not all of a sudden. People don't really. Just two people die. And then for the next 80 minutes, I think, it's... The whole movie is in one classroom with a group of kids trying to figure out what happened and how they can catch the killer.
A group of kids that can't act their way out of a nutsack either.
Yeah. That's all Scott's
true. I mean, we watch a lot of independent movies. And so, which means we see a lot of bad acting usually, but this is beyond bad.
Mm-hmm.
The acting in this fucking movie is.
This is a whole new realm of like Sam Neill bad shit we're talking about here. The ending of it is some kind of convoluted mess, like twist ending that nobody gives a shit about.
And because
by that time, you're like completely drained by having to watch a bunch of kids sit in the classroom talk.
Yeah. You got about 90 minutes or over 90 minutes of fucking talking. There is no action in this movie at all.
Yeah, and
there's no death scenes in this movie. I don't know. It's not horror genre. It's horrible genre, if you ask me.
Yeah, it really has no qualities about it, which...
And what's even worse is, like, I don't know. I didn't know there was actually a guy named Brain Damage that does these brain damage films. Did you see the...
Yeah, intro? The opening, yeah.
You got this douchebag.
Looks kind of like
a fucking douchebag. Yeah, he's got spiked hair, and he's trying to tell you, Brain Damage Films has been making movies for over a decade.
It's kind of like what Lloyd Kaufman does at the beginning of every trauma film, except a lot worse.
Yeah, I haven't seen a lot of brain damage movies, but I hope to God they're not as bad as this shit.
They are. I'm not joking. I've seen at least three of them, and they're all equally fucking horrible. I can't even lie about that. They're all bad.
I couldn't even tell you exactly what subgenre this is other than shit.
Yeah. But moving along, I guess we've bragged on that one enough.
Yeah, let's go on.
If you want to find that movie, don't.
Yeah, don't even look for it. If you see brain damage films on the internet, just please close your window out and don't even think of going on the side.
Matter of fact, just shut the computer down, it might infect it or something.
Yeah. I got one movie that I want to sort of mention on here simply because we didn't really review a bunch of movies this week other than the ones that we just did as far as independent stuff. This is more of an unearthed horrors, I guess, although I wouldn't really compare it to a lot of the movies that we've considered as unearthed horror movies before. This one's called Parents, which was directed by Bob Balaban. It's an odd movie. I've not seen many movies like it. What you have is you have Randy Quaid plays the dad and Mary Beth Hurt is the mother. And it's set in the 50s. And their little kid, Michael, is scared shitless of them. Because he knows that, they're basically eating human flesh for supper. And it's really artistic movie. Kind of like if you've seen the movie Pleasantville. It's kind of like that, but got a little bit of horror elements to it. I will not say it's horrible, but I will not say it's great. It's one of those that... I remember we bought the double feature a couple weeks ago when they had the big sale at Walmart. And it's probably worth $4.88. It's probably something I won't watch again. But I can say that for a lot of movies that I buy, so...
Yeah, and, at least got Randy Quaid.
It's original. It's something different, and it's got Randy Quaid in it. So.
Next movie I want to talk about is the last movie that I actually reviewed. Yeah. I've been waiting to watch this film for at least 6-7 months now. And it's Rolf Kanifsky's There's Nothing Out There, which is... It's a horror... /satire/spoof movie. What makes this movie so interesting is because I've heard about it from a lot of different people, but actually seeing it, I even understand this more so. This predates Scream by about 6 years. And there's, this is no bullshit. What is that guy's name that was in Scream? It's such an annoying little fucker. Jamie Kennedy, that's him. His character in that movie is directly based on a character in this film. I know it is. There's just no getting around it. Because the lead character in this film is a guy that watched so many horror films that he starts to understand that he's in the middle of one. And he starts to tell people about, constantly throughout the movie, tell people all the things that are happening around him that indicate that they're getting ready to be killed. Okay. Which is, there's one thing that's freaking hilarious, which they a group of kids drive up to, you know, a secluded, like, cabin house that one of them owns, and they're all sitting out on the porch, and all of a sudden a van of kids just drives up. They open the back doors and smoke starts pouring out, and they're all, like, dressed in biker gear and shit. And they're like, the first thing they say when they get out of the van is, "Let's take a dip in the pond." And, like, they all get in the pond and stuff, and one of the guys screams down to him and says, "What the hell are y'all doing at my house?" And he goes, "Oh, is this the lake by the camp?" And they go, "No, this is not. This is the house by the pond." And they go, "Oh, okay, we'll get out of here." So that was like the first foreshadowing that there was something was getting ready to happen.
Yeah.
But the killer in the film is this giant, like, hilarious-ass frog-looking thing of teeth.
Yeah, I'm looking at a picture of it right now.
It's great, though. It's just basically like a
You know what it kind of looks like in that picture? You remember Junk Heat that was on Fraggle Rock?
Yeah, that's exactly what it looks like. That's exactly what it looks like. It's just this foam latex thing that apparently, like, somebody from, you know, behind the camera throws at people in, like, different scenes. Yeah. And stuff. But this movie is hilarious in a lot of different ways, and it does, like, it did what Scream did, except about 5 or 6 years before Scream did it.
Yeah. I know Ralph Kineski, you know, he's another one that, for some reason, like, a lot of people don't know him. And I remember a lot of people don't even, we've got received emails when we had Tiffany Shepis on the show, and a lot of people didn't know who she was for some reason.
Yeah.
Well, let me tell you something. I'm putting money that within another 5 years, you'll know who Ralph Kineski is, and you'll know who Tiffany Shepis is. Everybody will.
I guarantee it. Yeah, especially when Nightmare Man comes up.
Yeah.
It should be recent.
Anyway.
But this, yeah, I just want to tell everybody that you definitely should get this film. And everything I've seen by Kineski, honestly, to a greater or lesser degree, has been, I thought, good. So if you want to get this film, you can go to imageentertainment.com. And I think Ralph Kineski has a website, which is just ralphkineskifilms.com, I think. But, yeah, you can get that at either one of those. It's worth it just to see where a lot of that parody came from for Scream.
Yeah, and I know Scream, you know, is basically a spoof on all horror movies.
Yeah, which is basically kind of exactly what this is.
Yeah. So, we're down to Dark Skies Films released a series that I didn't even know existed, actually. Season 1 of H.G. Wells' Invisible Man, which is from the 50s. And you have 13 episodes on this. Dark Sky Films came out, and I only had the chance to watch maybe half of them. I can tell you that if you're a fan of this type of stuff, you'll love this. The thing that's so funny is, and it's kind of odd considering, like, this is so old, the effects they use in that are dated, but they're still somewhat believable. I mean, they don't look, a lot of stuff they use, that monofilament wire with the Invisible Man, you know how they has the bandages around his face half the time. And, like, you know, when they're running past the Invisible Man in the woods, you could just see people shaking leaves and shit. And they were being creative. That's what they had to do. They didn't have computers back then that could make stuff look really bad.
They had to make stuff look bad themselves.
Yeah.
That's the point.
You know, the best way to explain it, you all know the Invisible Man story. An experiment gone wrong.
He's invisible.
What the fuck? And he's actually named Peter Brady is the Invisible Man.
That's right.
And, you know, he's a scientist, and the experiment turns him into the Invisible Man. And, you know, all kinds of shit just seems to happen to him after the first episode. Like, he just gets involved with, like, Nazis and people that want to, you know, somehow capture the Invisible Man, which wouldn't it seem to be impossible to do?
Yeah, he's invisible, for God's sake. It wouldn't be hard to get
They all want to use him for, like, evil experiments and stuff. And there's a ton of episodes on this, and I didn't get to watch them all. But I would highly recommend this, and I know that Dark Sky Films is coming out with, there's only 2 seasons. They're coming out with a second season in a few months. So if you love the old style stuff, which we seemingly don't really talk about too much on here, check this one out. It's something that I didn't even know existed, but it's something cool to check out, something different.
So I guess that wraps up the review section of the show.
Yeah, it wraps up the show.
Mm-hmm. And just keep in mind that next week is the interview with Judith O'Day.
On May
of the Dead.
On deadpit.com. And we are going to try our best. Now, we still don't have all the slots filled up for May of the Dead. Okay? We're going
to
try.
That's by no fault of our own. We'll get to that later.
We will unleash something next week.
We'll unleash the beast.
if something, doesn't happen that we think will happen. But anyway, I want to thank everybody for checking out the first week.
You definitely want to check out the whole month, though. I guarantee we'll have a guest on that people will want to hear every week.
We're going to aggravate the shit out of people until they talk to us. We can just tell you.
You can't get away from Dead Pit.
Yeah. So next week, we'll see you for May of the Dead here on DeadPit.com.
Trader lost both his name and his face.